This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
8:14 on this Thursday morning, more than one in five Americans provide unpaid care for a loved one. And Dr. B, our friend, Dr. Brent Wallace, the Chief Medical Officer of People's Health, joins us now to talk about the important work these caregivers do and share resources to help with burnout. Plus, we can discuss ways that you can support any caregivers in your life. How you doing, Dr. B?
Hey, Tommy, I'm doing great. How about you?
I am great. Good to talk to you. What is a caregiver? Let's start there.
Yeah, I mean, really, a caregiver can be anyone who tends to the needs of someone else, usually someone with a short or maybe a long-term limitation. And that can be due to something like an acute illness or an injury, or it may be a long-standing disability that they have. And it could be a close friend or a family member or really anyone else who needs that help and support. And every care situation is different. So every caregiver is going to be different, too. And some people expect to have that role at some point in their life, but for others, it comes as a complete surprise. And the responsibilities they're faced with and really the resources they have access to can vary tremendously.
What are some of the more common, I guess, caregiver responsibilities?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of caregivers help with daily living tasks. So that may be things related to hygiene or personal care, maybe housework for the individual or meal preparations. Caregivers also quite often help with a lot of medical tasks, and that can be really extensive. You know, things like scheduling appointments or maybe providing transportation to doctor's visits, managing prescriptions can be quite difficult. They really are advocates for their loved one's health needs overall.
It can be kind of stressful, I would think, for these responsibilities for these caregivers.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of the research shows that caregivers have a really high level of stress. A lot of them experience anxiety and some even depressive symptoms. You know, when those feelings reach a point of mental or maybe physical exhaustion, that is what we call caregiver burnout.
What is it that causes burnout?
So there's a lot of different things that we look at when we're looking at what contributes to burnout. It's really natural to want to see some positive change in the people that you're caring for, but unfortunately that doesn't always happen. And it can be really difficult to watch a loved one struggle to actually take care of themselves. That can cause a whole lot of stress. And then also depending on what your caregiving responsibilities are, you may feel like you don't have the time or the resources or maybe even the skills to properly care for that loved one. And you might feel like you're not doing enough. It can be really hard to let go of those unrealistic expectations. And that can really affect your caregiver's ability to continue providing that help, which is so critical. And it can really turn into more stress. And that can become a cycle.
You can only do the best that you can do, but when it comes to finances, again, you can only do the best that you can do, and I would imagine that there's been some financial stress involved with caregiving.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, caregivers, they might need to take off time, unpaid time, you know, from their jobs in order to go to a medical visit with the person they're caring for and keep up with all those responsibilities. And, you know, a lot of caregivers actually help to pay for their loved one's medical cost. And we know medical costs can get extremely expensive. They may even have to help with housing costs or really just those daily living, you know, the cost of living in particular.
What are some of the signs of caregiver burnout? Maybe a caregiver might recognize, or maybe the person receiving the care might recognize?
Yeah, I mean, typically what we see is the caregiver may become sad. They might be anxious or really just feel exhausted or overwhelmed. And so some of the things you'll see are changes in your sleep pattern, maybe too much sleep or too little sleep. You can actually develop some body complaints, aches and pains in particular, because pain is very related to stress levels. And you can have trouble controlling your emotions. And when it gets really bad, you may lose interest in the activities that you used to enjoy as well. That's a really bad sign.
Some ways to maybe prevent or cope with caregiver burnout?
Yeah, the most important thing I always tell people is make sure that you give yourself a break. You've got to sometimes step away from what you're doing. It's really important for your own mental and your physical health. And it's something you should never feel guilty about. A lot of people do, but you should not feel guilty about it. You can ask a friend or a family member maybe to stay with the loved one you're caring for just so you can catch up on sleep or maybe do an activity you enjoy, and that's okay. It doesn't need to be something productive. It's just something that helps you relax and recharge a little bit and help you keep doing what you're doing. And then you want to really remember to take care of yourself. You know, stay on top of your own health and you know, make sure that if you are not well, you're not going to be able to care for that loved one. You want to keep up with your doctor's appointments and keep up with those healthy habits like exercising and eating well. That'll also help you with the stress level.
Sounds like when you're on a plane and they give you the instructions about putting the mask on yourself first, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good analogy.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up here. We come back. We're talking to Dr. B about unpaid caregivers in this nation. More than 1 in 5 Americans provide unpaid care for a loved one, but it can cause burnout on the part of the person providing the care. We'll talk about fighting that burnout when we come back. 820 Traffic Now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Dr. B, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health, Dr. Brent Wallace, talking about unpaid caregivers. I get shots in my eye every 4 or 5 weeks, and I'm the youngest guy in the office, but I do see a lot of unpaid caregivers there, and sometimes I can sense some tension, I guess, because of burnout. How can caregivers fight burnout, Doc?
Yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to reach out for support. That's a really big thing. You might need to talk to a therapist or maybe a mental health professional about all of those fears and frustrations that come along with caregiving. And we actually have a lot of support groups in our area. Some are even disease specific. It's a good opportunity to get together with other people going through what you're going through and really have the opportunity to encourage each other and maybe swap some tips. And just keep in mind that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to caregiving. It's different depending on what you're having to deal with. But the one thing that's true for everybody is just don't wait until you're completely overwhelmed to start taking care of yourself. You've got to think about how you can adjust your routine to protect yourself later.
Let's say you're not a caregiver, but you know somebody who is. How can you kind of support them?
Yeah, I mean, that's really easy. Just ask them how you can help. You know, if you don't get a clear answer, which sometimes you don't, you might even want to offer some very specific suggestions like, you know, hey, can I grab some groceries for you? Can I run an errand? You know, can I go pick up prescriptions for you? Because that can take a lot of time. And then, you know, offer to sit with that caregiver's loved one for a few hours just so they can take a break. Another big thing that takes up a lot of time for caregivers is paperwork. You can actually help them with paperwork or research respite care providers in the area and support groups. Those administrative tasks are a really important part of caregiving, but they go by the wayside if you don't have time to do them.
I'm getting a lot of texts coming in. People are this is resonating with a lot of people that are listening because they're in that position. I know sometimes having been through it personally, sometimes people say, you know, I got this. I don't want any help. I don't need any help. What if a caregiver will not accept help or doesn't accept help?
Yeah, I mean, that's very common. A lot of caregivers won't ask for help, and then they may say, no, you know, I've got it, because they feel guilty. Mm-hmm. And what you can still do is maybe find smaller ways to show support for them. You know, maybe drop off a coffee or a homemade meal or something just to help them out. And really a big thing is just trying to stay in touch with them. You know, make a little bit of time to give them a call, maybe send them a text or stop by and offer encouragement. You know, let them kind of unload that burden a little bit through conversation, and that may make them feel a little more comfortable in accepting some more help from you.
This is valuable information, Dr. B. Any final advice for supporting a caregiver?
Yeah, I think a big thing is, you know, almost everyone at some point in their lives is probably going to be a caregiver, you know, so think about what would help you in that situation. Sometimes one of the most helpful things you can do, like I said, is just listen to them. That can be extremely useful. And remember that caregivers deal with a whole lot of fear and frustration, that they're not doing everything they could. It's hard to manage those feelings. And so anything you can do to help them with that, you know, lend an ear, do your best to kind of support them and be really attentive and present for them. And that can really go a long way to help them out.
I think the only thing you can do is, and that's my theory of life, is if you can look yourself in a mirror, say you're doing everything you can do, that's all you can do, right, Doc?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard for some people to understand or accept that. And so that's why it's really important to understand, like I said, everybody's going to go through this. Most everybody is, you know, so be very supportive of people when they're faced with this issue.
Thank you, Doctor. Good information. I appreciate your time. Hope you have a good weekend.
Thanks, Tommy. You too.
Dr. B, Dr. Brent Wallace, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health. You can find out more about People's Health by going to peopleshealth.com. You can call them at 800-978-9765. You can stop by the People's Health Medicare Center on Veterans Boulevard next to Party City, 3017 Vets. And if you want to listen to this again about being a caregiver or helping an unpaid caregiver, you can download the Odyssey app, use the rewind feature, or go to WWL.com, click on my name, the audio will be posted in a little while. And God bless all of y'all that are doing this. I know it's hard, but you really are doing God's work. 8:30, time for WWL First News. 8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Leslie Harris, New Orleans City Council member, our friend. How you doing, Leslie?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Are you okay? You
doing
all right? Yeah.
I'm all right. I'm great.
Do you have a council meeting today or not at 10 o'clock?
We do, yes.
Okay. At 9 o'clock, you need to either listen or you need to go back and listen to the audio, because we're going to have Brian Hare on, who is the author of Puppy Kindergarten and a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Duke University. He runs the Duke Canine Cognition Center, and he's going to tell us what dogs are thinking. How do we read their body language, and do they know what we're saying to them? And I know you've had some issues with those miscreants of yours, right?
I have two test subjects. He can borrow, yes.
Yeah, I'd be glad to ship them up there for a couple of, you take them, Doc. Take them for a couple of months. God bless you. Good luck. Let's talk about the homeless center that the governor opened. I know I see some different numbers. My own math showed me that it was like $162,000 per person of the people that didn't leave. And that just astounds me. I don't know. Nobody's asking a question. Everybody's, you know, some people are asking questions. I get texts saying, well, the city wouldn't do anything, so the governor stepped in and got the homeless people off the street for the Super Bowl and for the Taylor Swift concert. But forget the humanity part of this. For $162,000, you could have bought somebody a house. I don't understand how it costs that much. Do you, and I know your figure says $85,000 to $105,000 per person, but I looked at the number of people that 108, I think it was, and divided it by the number that the governor's office put out. It didn't make any sense to me. Thoughts?
It doesn't make any sense. And that figure, whether your figure is right or my figure is right, that's only for 2.5 months of that temporary shelter. That does not include the cost of housing people after the shelter closed or services given to the folks after the shelter closed. So the math just doesn't add up. If you actually put, you know, if you multiplied it by 12 months, let's just say the shelter was open for a year, that would be around, I think, $350,000 per person. Again, you could house somebody through what the city was doing for multiple years. The city's plan would cost about $21,000 per person per year, which would include housing, health care, additional treatment, and wraparound services. So we were on track to do to house people for a lot less than that temporary shelter cost. And I'm concerned because once it closed, people were put into the low barrier shelter. There are some people who are unaccounted for, and we're seeing people pop back up on the streets, but more importantly, in neighborhoods and in blighted properties, as we predicted this would happen once the shelter closed.
So the bottom line is, and correct me if I'm saying anything wrong here, and you're a very talented attorney, and keep me out of trouble here, Leslie. I'd like to retain you if I can, but we spent $162,000 to get the homeless out of sight for the Taylor Swift concert and the Super Bowl. The homeless center is now, the shelter is now closed. Of the 108 people found housing at a cost of $162,000 per, and for the other people, they're in low barrier shelters or are making their way back to the streets. So $162,000 later, while 108 people did find housing, you could have done it. The city was doing it for $21,000, not $162,000. If I'm correct there. And meanwhile, where'd all that money go? And we're right back to where we started. Did I say anything that's inaccurate there?
That's absolutely accurate. And it's perplexing. And, you know, the legislative auditor just released a report on the city's efforts to shelter people and said that we were following best practices. You know, we needed some additional data sharing, but also that the state of Louisiana really wasn't helping the city of New Orleans fund homelessness efforts prior to the transitional center. So I would encourage the legislative auditor to dig into this transition center to see where the money went, how it was spent, who it went to.
I think, you know, a lot of times, and look, I don't know what I don't know here, but a lot of times people, you know, throw a lot of red herrings out there with homeless and get people fired up about that, or Democratic administration get people fired up about that. Meanwhile, they're not keeping track of the money, and sometimes, you know, you get people looking red or blue and they don't see green, which is, again, I hope somebody looks into this, because, and I'm not going to let it go, because I don't understand how it cost, and again, by my math, $162,000, by yours, $85,000 to $125,000 per person for 2.5 months, and we're basically going to be in a couple of weeks right back where we started. We'll pick it up. We come back with Leslie Harris, 850, 10 till 9. We'll talk about her role in reducing the NOPD's backlog of DNA tests, which is very important. Leslie Harris, Joe Geruso, I'm just going to pick a couple of names for you. Very talented people. Leslie left a partnership at a law firm for public service. Joe Geruso is leaving public service to go to a law firm because he's got kids to go through college and everything else. And I think both of them are interested in the best interests of the city. That's just my opinion. 8:51, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Leslie Harris. Leslie, I don't want to skip over this too quickly, but to go back to the legislative auditor, the audit that they conducted sent a letter to the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, Philip DeVilliers, Cameron Henry, respectively, dated March 21st of 2025. That audit found, if you can give me a quick executive summary.
Sure. The audit found that the city of New Orleans was following best practices in decommissioning the encampments, that we had decommissioned 51% of the planned 14 encampments. So we had cleared 8 encampments, housed people of 14, and we're on track to continue that. It also said that the state needed to help support this effort. And so I encourage anybody to go online and read the entire report. It has some interesting findings.
Let's talk about backlog of DNA and NOPD.
Yeah. I can tell you that when I first got into office, myself and my chief of staff visited the state crime lab. The state crime lab tests not only DNA kits from the city of New Orleans, but from across the state. And our DNA kits go in line with other jurisdictions. So we literally saw stacks of DNA kits just sitting there waiting to be tested. That was really heartbreaking given the low clearance rate, especially of our sexual assault cases here in New Orleans. And so I allocated $3 million to clear that backlog, and we are on track to clear it. We have tested 926 cases, and we will continue to work with the state crime lab on clearing those that backlog.
What happens now with the homeless situation in New Orleans now that the governor's facility wherever it was, on Gentilly, is closed? What happens now, Leslie, as far as the city and resources and getting homeless people off the streets?
We will continue to do what we were doing before the governor opened the transition center, which is intensive outreach to people who are unhoused, getting them the services that they need and getting them the housing that they need.
What will you be paying attention to at the council meeting today?
Oh, everything. We have a lot of budget items on track. We also have a tree ordinance that I've authored to protect our tree canopy. So that should be an interesting discussion.
Thank you, Leslie Harris. I appreciate your time as always. And look, seriously, listen. I know you can't listen to the next hour, but go back and find the audio with this dog psychiatrist, all right?
Absolutely. Thank you.
We all are going to need some medication or something, I guarantee you, with the dogs. Thank you. Brian Hare will be here next, author of Puppy Kindergarten and a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Duke University. Text your questions in, 504-260-1870. What's your dog doing, and have you ever wondered why he or she is doing it? Body language. We'll talk about it when we come back. WWL.